Laudator Jesus Christus. Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Monday, August 8th, Pope Francis expresses his closeness to victims of a massive fuel depot fire in Cuba. Christian leaders visit Ukraine in a show of solidarity amid the ongoing war, and a ceasefire eases tensions between Israel and Gaza that have killed over 40 people. In the Vatican, I'm Devin Watkins. Pope Francis today conveyed his closeness and said he is praying for the victims of a massive fire in Cuba. Lightning struck the Matanzas supertanker base in the Caribbean nation, sparking a huge fuel-fed fire. Sophie Peters has the story.
Pope Francis has expressed his closeness to the Cuban people and the loved ones of those affected by the massive oil-fed fire at Cuba's supertanker port in Matanzas over the weekend. The blaze began on Friday night after lightning struck a fuel storage tank at a depot in Matanzas. The fire spread to a second storage tank on Saturday morning, triggering further explosions. As of Sunday, Cuba appeared to have made some progress in bringing the fire under control, with the help of special teams sent by other countries. According to news reports, at least one person died, 17 firefighters are missing, and 121 people have been hurt in the fire. Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin conveyed the Pope's sentiments in a telegram on Monday, addressed to the President of the Bishops' Conference of Cuba. The Holy Father noted that he is closely following the news about the unfortunate accident that caused a fire and several explosions at the Matanzas supertanker base, with at least one death and many wounded and missing. He also assured the people of Cuba and the families of those affected of his spiritual closeness, and prays to the Lord to grant them strength in this moment of pain to sustain the work of extinguishing the fire and the search for those unaccounted for. With these sentiments, read the telegram, the Pope imparts to them a heartfelt, comforting apostolic blessing as a pledge of hope in the risen Christ. I'm Sophie Peters.
In Ukraine, international organizations have issued warnings over shelling at the Zaporizhzhia nuclear complex, calling for the site to be made a demilitarized zone. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called for international observers to be given access to the site after Russia and Ukraine traded blame for the weekend shelling. Stefan Boss reports.
Ukrainian state nuclear power company Enroatom says 500 Russian soldiers are at Europe's largest nuclear plant, and it claims Russia has positioned rocket launchers there. Ukraine and Russia have accused each other of shelling the site in the southeastern Ukrainian city of Zaporizhzhia. Ukrainian authorities say parts of the nuclear power plant are seriously damaged and that there is an increased risk of fire and radiation. Russian troops have occupied the facility since March. The United States has accused Russia of using the nuclear site to shield its forces. Moscow has denied wrongdoing. The reported clashes around the site prompted the International Atomic Energy Agency, or IAEA, to warn of the very real risk of a nuclear disaster. That's why United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres demands that IAEA inspectors are given access to the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant.
Any attack to a nuclear plant is a suicidal thing, and I hope that those attacks will end. And at the same time, I hope that the IAEA will be able to have access to the plant and to exercise its mandate competencies.
Guterres spoke in Japan, where he visited Hiroshima over the weekend to commemorate the 77th anniversary of the world's first atomic bombing, which resulted in 140,000 deaths. For Vatican Radio, I am Stefan Bos, reporting.
Staying with Ukraine, a delegation from the World Council of Churches, or WCC, has traveled to Kyiv to express their solidarity amid the ongoing war. As Father Benedict Mayaki reports, the Christian leaders met with local church and state institutions over the course of 5 days.
A delegation from the World Council of Churches has paid a visit to Ukraine as the Russian invasion, which has devastated several cities and caused a humanitarian crisis, enters into its sixth month. A WCC statement said that the delegation, led by the Acting General Secretary, Reverend Dr. Yuan Taosa, visited the besieged nation from the 1st to the 5th of August to listen to the representatives of local churches as well as state institutions working with religious issues and to ensure the participation of Ukraine's churches at the upcoming WCC Assembly, taking place from the 31st of August to the 8th of September in Germany. In June, the WCC Central Committee had issued a statement on the ongoing war, lamenting Russia's invasion of its neighbor. Reverend Taosa, reiterating the 18th June WCC Central Committee statement, said, "When one part of the body suffers, all parts suffer with it, and we are in Christian solidarity with all those who suffer in Ukraine." During the visit, the WCC delegation met with the Ukrainian Council of Churches and Religious Organizations, which represents Christian denominations in Ukraine, as well as Jewish and Muslim communities. On the 3rd of August, with the aim of emphasizing the invitation to participate at the upcoming WCC Assembly, the delegation met with the Metropolitan of Kiev and all Ukraine, Epiphany of the Orthodox Church of Ukraine, and Archbishop Evstrati of Chernihiv and Nizhyn, Deputy Head of the External Church Relations Department of the Orthodox Church of Ukraine. The following day, on the 4th of August, Dr. Taosa met with the Metropolitan of Kiev and all Ukraine, Onufriy of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. The five-day visit provided the WCC delegation the opportunity to learn a lot about the ongoing war in Ukraine from meetings with various state institutions. In all the encounters, the WCC Acting General Secretary, Dr. Taosa, underlined the importance of the participation of Ukraine's churches at the WCC Assembly in Germany, which he said will be an opportunity for the people of Ukraine to address the global WCC fellowship, sharing and praying together for an end to the war and the reestablishment of peace in Ukraine. I'm Father Benedict Mayaki.
Israel reopened border crossings into Gaza on Monday following an Egyptian-brokered ceasefire with the militant Islamic Jihad group. The agreement ended the most recent and serious outbreak of fighting around the volatile Palestinian coastal strip in more than a year. Lydia O'Kane has the details.
People in Gaza were counting the cost on Monday of 56 hours of violence, which began when Israeli airstrikes hit a senior Islamic Jihad commander. At least 44 people were killed, including 15 children, and hundreds more were wounded in the raids, which Israel said was a preemptive strike against an attack planned by the Iranian-backed group. In retaliation, Palestinian militants fired more than 1,000 rockets at Israel, sending residents of southern areas and major cities, including Tel Aviv, fleeing into shelters. A fragile ceasefire deal brokered by Egypt to end nearly 3 days of fighting continued to hold on Monday. As the truce came into effect, Israel said it was partially reopening crossings into Gaza for humanitarian needs and would fully open them if calm was maintained. The violence had threatened to spiral into another all-out war, but ended up being contained because Gaza's ruling Hamas group stayed on the sidelines as Israel focused on Islamic Jihad targets. Israeli officials said two commanders and around 20 fighters were killed by the strikes, and large quantities of anti-tank weapons and rocket production and storage facilities were destroyed. In a statement, US President Joe Biden said he welcomed the ceasefire between Israel and Gaza-based militants. Over these last 72 hours, the United States has worked with officials from Israel, the Palestinian Authority, Egypt, Qatar, Jordan, and others throughout the region to encourage a swift resolution to the conflict, he said. The latest violence comes a little over a year after the 11-day war in May 2021 killed 250 Gazans and brought an already fragile economy to its knees. The opening of the border crossings on Monday allowed fuel trucks into supply Gaza's only power plant and increased the availability of electricity, which was down to around 8 hours per day. Around 2.3 million people live in Gaza, a narrow coastal strip which has been under a blockade imposed by Egypt and Israel after Hamas seized power in 2007. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
The Catholic bishops of Nicaragua have voiced their solidarity with Bishop Rolando Alvarez of Matagalpa. The bishop has been stuck in his residence since Thursday after police accused him of allegedly inciting acts of violence to destabilize the country. Lisa Zengarini has more.
As he continues to be held under house arrest, the Bishops' Conference of Nicaragua have expressed their fraternal closeness, amity and episcopal communion with Bishop Rolando José Álvarez and all the Church of Matagalpa. In their statement, the bishops say their hearts are touched by the plight of Bishop Álvarez, remarking that the Church proclaims the gospel of peace and in this light is always open to collaboration with national and international authorities. As the Nicaraguan Church celebrates the National Marian Congress, the bishops therefore invited the faithful to pray the rosary, invoking the intercession of Our Lady of the Immaculate Conception, the patroness of Nicaragua. The Archdiocese of Managua also sent a message of closeness to Bishop Álvarez and the Church of Matagalpa, expressing hope that frank and respectful communication may open paths of mutual understanding. At the same time, the Archdiocese, led by Cardinal Leopoldo Brenes, Vice President of the local Episcopal Conference, invited the faithful to continue to pray so that the word may be proclaimed and the pastoral ministry of the Church in the country may be exercised to its full extent. In the past days, several Latin American bishops have voiced their solidarity with the Church in Nicaragua alongside the Latin American Episcopal Council, which on Friday called on the faithful in Latin America and the Caribbean to join in prayer for the Church in Nicaragua and its authorities. While expressing their closeness and requesting that religious freedom be respected, the Latin American bishops have asked not to give up efforts to build dialogue to achieve unity and peace in the country. I am Lisa Zingarini.
Colombia's first-ever leftist president started his first day of work today after being inaugurated on Sunday and promising to unite the country. James Blears reports on the goals of President Gustavo Petro.
It was Gustavo Petro's third attempt to win the presidency of Colombia. He defeated the traditional ruling elite and then maverick real estate millionaire Rodolfo Hernandez in a close runoff. Francia Marquez is Colombia's first-ever black vice president, heralding another new beginning. Once an M19 guerrilla, Gustavo Petro abandoned extreme politics to be elected the mayor of Bogota and a senator. He's promising not two societies nor two nations but one, reinforcing a just and united Colombia. Enacting his policies and getting his legislation through Congress will be a real test. He's pledged major tax and pension reform, boosting programs for the poor, free public university education, relations with neighboring Venezuela, plus a global powerhouse for life by reducing emissions and tackling deforestation. President Petro has also boldly stated that the global war against narcotics has failed and that more focus must be brought to bear on consuming nations, which are the demand destination for tons of cocaine. The 2016 peace accord with the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, the FARC, didn't include the smaller National Liberation Army, the ELN, which is still fighting. Petro seeks talks with them and other groups who are brandishing and using guns. A society previously petrified of a left-winger now has Petro, who's promising a different approach to transform Colombia. For Vatican Radio, James Blears reporting.
That brings us to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. For more on these and other stories, go to our web portal at www.vaticannews.va. And don't forget to catch the latest updates on our Facebook page and Twitter feed. Many thanks go to Bruno Orti in studio. In the Vatican, I'm Devin Watkins.